Hello and welcome to Every Little Quibble. One thing we love about the ELT community is that anytime we do an episode and there is more to the story, a fact unferreted, an anecdote unaccounted for, y'all let us know, which brings me a great amount of joy. I love quibbles that lead us down interesting paths. And so today we are reaching deep into the ELT mailbag and addressing some of our favorite well actuallys in a segment we're calling Well Factually. Up first, a few weeks ago, we had tunnel expert Dr. Mole on the show, and in the course of telling us fascinating details about tunnels, Dr. Mole made this offhand comment about how every time he flies, he seems to sit next to someone working in IT. Sounded innocuous enough until we got this message on the ELT helpline.
I just listened to your show and I laughed when Dr. Mole was bored by people on the plane who tell him they do IT work for a job. I know a lot of people who work for alphabet agencies. Essentially, they're spies for the government. They always say they do IT work. You shouldn't be so bored when people say they do IT work. You might want to ask more probing questions. You can't reach me. Bye.
Do spies, or people who work for alphabet agencies, CIA, FBI, NSA, tell people they work in IT when they fly? That did seem worth a probing question or two, so we called someone who would know.
I spent 21 years, mostly in the Middle East, but all abroad.
This is ex-CIA operative Robert Baer. George Clooney's character in the movie Syriana is based on him.
It was the right casting. Well, look, he was looking sort of bedraggled. And the jacket he wore is actually a jacket I used to wear in the Middle East. It was a little bit dirty, wine-stained, dirty at the sleeves, a little bit worn.
Okay, let's get to the reason why we're here. Robert, when spies fly, do they say they work in IT?
Yes, a lot of them do. I mean, if you go to the farm, which is the CIA school, they will bring this up.
At CIA school, they teach you to say you work in IT.
Well, it's more than that. They will teach you to be the least important person in the room, the least memorable. They'll teach you how to dress.
Tell me more.
Oh, well, you definitely don't want to be wearing a Hugo Boss suit or a Brioni that's, you know, that costs $15,000 because people remember that. You want to be the least conspicuous person.
Yeah.
Just so you're absolutely forgettable. Like right now at my age, I mean, nobody notices me. You know, I just sort of, you know, sort of clunk along some sort of Forrest Gump and people just don't remember me, which would make me a good spy. Or, you know, there's other ways to be so people don't remember you. And that's, for instance, put a flashing diode on your front tooth.
What?
Because that's the only thing people remember. You know, if you're going to rob a bank, go in and have a flashing diode on your tooth, and the teller will say, well, I don't know what he looked like. I was just amazed that his tooth was flashing.
This is a strategy? If I want my face forgotten, I should put a flashing light on my tooth.
Or some really clunky glasses that are scratched. Anything to focus people's attention on something else. And it's like, you know, can I be sexist if I could?
We don't usually welcome that, but go ahead.
A beautiful woman in the spy business is memorable. And it's much more difficult for her to go out because people look at beautiful women and they remember them. Say, oh yeah, I remember her. She was a stunning woman. She came into the restaurant. Everybody looked at her. My wife worked for the CIA and she's very small and petite. But almost looks like a librarian and would put glasses on and go into a restaurant with a Glock, a 40 Glock in her handbag and read a book. And it was like a quick draw handbag. So the gun would pop into her hand and nobody had ever noticed her with, you know, reading glasses on.
What do you mean
on
a quick draw handbag?
There's a cavity in the bottom of a bag so that if you open it up, it's security. They don't see anything. But if you slam your hand into it, it will pop a pistol into your hand or a small machine gun.
I'll look for that on Etsy. So spies really do carry gadgets.
Yeah, they carry gadgets. You know, if you want to get into the really sexy stuff, the Russians, I've seen, they've shown me, they carry Mont Blanc pens with a 5.56 silenced round in it.
Oh, so a firearm in a pen.
Yeah. Don't ever underestimate the Russians, in particular on technology. They're very, very good at this spy stuff.
What's the coolest thing you carried?
The coolest thing I ever carried, I don't know, it was sort of cool, it was a laser microphone. You can shoot it at a window at a mile distance, and you can read a conversation in a room. Because when the laser returns, we'll send the vibrations back and you can listen to the conversation.
Is this real?
Yeah, it's real. Look a laser mic up. I mean, a lot of this stuff is out there. There are basically no secrets, but it's.
By the way, this does exist and it's available for $14,000 on Alibaba. Okay, I want to close the loop on the IT question we started with.
Yeah.
So why IT? Why say you work in IT?
Because most people don't understand it. The intricacies are only interesting to somebody in the business.
IT folks, 833-RING-ELT if you want to dispute that. So, Robert, do you think people should ask more probing questions if they're sitting next to someone who does IT?
Well, people won't do that. A spy will. If you do say you're working in IT and somebody starts probing you, you better wonder what their motivations are.
Thank you, mysterious caller, whoever you are, for this IT spy tip. You were right. Okay, our next Well Factually comes from hockey fan and ELT listener, Eric.
I don't want to sound too much like a dick, but I was listening to the podcast the other day. I guess you were talking about the mascot for the Vegas Golden Knights, but it is surprisingly not a Golden Knight as their mascot. It's a Gila monster named Chance.
Okay, I made a mistake in a recent show about the identity of the Golden Knights hockey team's mascot.
Yeah, way to go, Flora. You failed to recognize that their mascot's a Gila monster, right?
That's Dan Beck, biologist and Gila Meister. He is here to help us right this wrong and give this lizard its due.
Yeah, I can speak on behalf of Gila monsters.
I want to start by getting this lizard's name right. The pronunciation is not obvious from the spelling, which is G-I-L-A.
Right, yeah, it's Gila.
Gila.
Yeah, Gila monster. They were named after the Gila River in New Mexico and Arizona. So they were kind of called the monster of the Gila River. And before they became known as a Gila monster, they were called the spitter because they hiss. And sometimes when they hiss, people think they're spitting.
So they need this PR boost. Okay, so here we go. Gila monsters, top three reasons why we should admire them, with Dan Beck.
Well, one, there is, it may not seem this to people at first glance, but they're beautiful.
It doesn't seem beautiful at first glance because this is what a Gila monster looks like.
Imagine a large sausage that is bumpy and looks like the colors of Halloween candy, sort of black and yellow, with a thick, black, forked tongue and little tiny black beaded eyes and claws that look like human hands.
And here's where the beauty part comes in. This sausage with a black forked tongue, beady eyes, and tiny human hands is bedazzled head to toe with shiny beads.
They are beaded, totally. They have scales called osteoderms that are beads. In fact, the scientific name Heloderma means Helo is Greek for stud, a nail stud.
Mm.
And then derma means skin. So they're literally named studded skin.
If you were to hold one in your hands, how would it feel?
It would feel like a Navajo purse.
That's number one reason to admire them. Unconventional beauty. Here's the second reason to admire the Gila monster. Despite the aforementioned silhouette,
that, you know, whole sausage thing,
this portly reptile that spends 95% of its life underground also has an unexpected sporty side.
So they wrestle. It's a ritualized form of wrestling where one lizard tries to stay on top of the other lizard.
These wrestling matches can go on for hours.
They can even go overnight. One of my students and friends witnessed two Gila monsters fighting in the desert. They stopped, took a break for over the night, and they resumed the next morning. Probably why they're good for a hockey team, because to be a good hockey team, I imagine you have to be tenacious. And Gila monsters are very tenacious.
Do they bite people?
They do bite. They can bite. And you don't want to get bitten by a Gila monster. It's excruciatingly painful. It bites and hangs on and kind of chews the venom into the wound. And it takes a while for the venom to get deposited, but they don't let go.
Tenacity. That's reason two. Third reason to admire these beaded Jimmy Deans? Well, their venom is a pharmaceutical gold mine.
There's a fairly new drug for treating type 2 diabetes developed directly from a peptide that was discovered in Gila monster venom. Other molecules in the venom have intriguing applications for cancer, sexual dysfunction, and other physiological processes.
In summary, this is a beautiful, mildly athletic sausage that can save human lives. To all the Gila monsters out there, I just want to apologize. And thanks to listener Eric for calling us out. After the break, did pirates say yar? Ahoy! Welcome aboard for our last Wealth Actually. A few weeks ago, we did a deep dive into the world of pirates, but apparently ELT listeners' thirst for pirate info has not been quenched. We got a lot of follow-up questions. So we are wading back in with pirate expert Laura Sook Duncombe.
Good morning, Flora. How are you?
Are you up for helping us make sure that ELT listeners have full and complete pirate knowledge?
I'm here for the listeners of every little thing, for every little pirate detail. I'm here for it.
Great. Laura, there was this cannonball-sized hole in our reporting, and that was about how pirates talk.
Arr, we got a good fight coming up.
Did pirates say yar?
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but the answer to that is no. pirates spoke, you know, in many different languages across time and didn't really have a standardized dialect. They would have probably cobbled together words they could understand among the various crews that spoke different languages. So the yars, et cetera, the things that we have known and love, we can trace back to a man named Robert Newton. He was an actual sailor in World War II, but when he came back from the war, he started appearing in movies. And his big breakout hit was Treasure Island, and he played the infamous Long John Silver. And he just kind of talked like he talked.
Give him a drop of rum to warm his belly as he passes over. Now serve up your...
Okay, no yar. Yo-ho-ho. How about yo-ho-ho?
Yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum actually comes from a song. 15 men on a dead man's chest, yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum.
15 men on a dead man's chest.
But that was, you know, we can't attribute that all the way back to the pirates.
Okay, next question. Listener Allison on Twitter asked, did pirates wear eye patches?
All right. Pirates frequently lost eyes because of cannonballs. So cannonballs would hit your ship and there would be splinters of wood everywhere. And people got splinters in the eye. There was a fantastic amount of damage from splinters. So some pirates definitely wore eye patches.
Can I just throw in a fact? There is one thing that we left out that I think listeners must know.
Okay.
It pertains to a certain celebrity pirate who you may have spotted at the swim-up bar.
They got a little captain in them. Got a little captain in you.
Drink responsibly.
Yes. Captain Morgan is a real pirate.
That is changing my relationship to rum-based drinks in a major way.
Yeah, so Captain Morgan was a very colorful character.
Did Captain Morgan look like the dude on the bottle, like the big hoop earring, flowy shirt?
It's entirely possible. Pirates were definitely into gold earrings for various reasons. You know, there's a myth that a pirate wore a gold earring because if he died, then that gold could be used to pay for a proper funeral. It was also said that pirates wore earrings because if the sun shined on them, it could, you know, temporarily blind the person they were fighting with. And so also pirates could keep the gold that they had on them. It would, you know, you would take a pirate's purse, but you wouldn't necessarily take the earring out of their ear. And so it was sort of currency they could carry. So it's not entirely ridiculous to say that Captain Morgan could have had a big hoop earring and a hat and a cape. He was in the right time period for it.
Okay, Laura, one more question. Did pirates bury their treasure?
So pirates did not bury their treasure, unfortunately. That does come from Treasure Island. Pirates spent their treasure as quickly as they got it. They would take their money, go to port, and spend it all in one glorious night of women and wine and, you know, maybe some new clothes, and then back out on the ships to do it again. So they weren't thinking far enough ahead to bury their treasure.
Another hoop earring and they were good.
That's true. Once you've got your earring to pay for your funeral, just, you know, get a really great bottle of rum and find some companionship for the evening and just, you know, sing all your cares away.
Thanks, everybody, for the great Wealth Actuallys. Before we go, I want to tell you about a new podcast I'm really excited about. Our consulting editor on ELT, Ian Chillog, has a brand new show. It's called Everything is Alive. I think you're really going to like it. Take a listen to this trailer.
This season on Everything is Alive.
I mean, I was bred to be a killer. I'm a killing machine.
Interviews with inanimate objects.
You know, I'm a mousetrap.
I am a subway seat.
My name is Lewis, and I am a can of cola.
You know, I come from a very large family tree, over 100 feet.
Literally a tree.
Yes.
What they think of themselves, and what they think of us.
I have a great function for people who want to get rid of mice, which is all people.
You know, I spend all day, hopefully, with someone sitting on me. And so the butt is my window to the soul.
Am I just a can? Am I soda? Once the soda's gone, the can remains, but bye-bye me, I think.
Everything is Alive, Season 1, coming soon.
All beings endeavor to persist in their own being. Spinoza said that. I heard about that from a cup of coffee.
The first episode is out July 17th. You can subscribe right now. Go check it out. And if you have a question for us, something that we can help you with, or a comment, give us a ring, 833-RING-ELT. That's 833-RING-ELT. And don't forget that the Fact Buddy Exchange is open for business. The facts are rolling in. Put your best fact on a postcard and send it to ELT at Gimlet Media, 92 3rd Street, Brooklyn, New York, 11231, and we will mail you a fact in return.
Every Little Thing is produced by Phoebe Flanagan, Aaron Reese, Bradley Campbell, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Ian Chillog and Caitlin Kenny. Dara Hirsch scored and mixed this episode.
Arr, ay, matey.
Goodbye.